Radio Cherry Bomb is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station devoted to all things food. Help keep HRN alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. Beginning as Balducci's Fruit Stand in Greenwich Village 70 years ago, Baldor Specialty Foods has been curating and delivering the highest quality foods in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. Chefs rely on Baldor for the freshest and most seasonal ingredients, along with new and exciting items that you just can't get elsewhere. Baldor's ordering process is designed with a chef's schedule and priorities in mind to get you what you need when you need it. Baldor is the trusted resource and partner for the region's top chefs. Learn what Baldor can do for your business today at baldorfood.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Prince Street, Dean and DeLuca's monthly podcast dedicated to the delicious and infinite connections between people and food. Each new Prince Street podcast features special guests, field reports, and meals from around the world. Editor-in-Chief Howie Kahn hosts the show, featuring segments from correspondents such as Griffin Dunn, Jay McInerney, Eden Grinspan, and Sierra Tischgart. Download Prince Street on iTunes and online at livefromprincestreet.com. Prince Street, a fresh new podcast with a culinary heart.
I'm Erica Weitz, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond, co-founder and editorial director of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food. For the next several weeks, we'll be sharing all the talks and panels from this year's Cherry Bomb Jubilee, our annual celebration of women in the world of food. Our third annual Jubilee took place earlier this year on April 10th at the Highline Hotel in Manhattan and gave us the chance to welcome and network with the hundreds of amazing women who attended. Our friends at Heritage Radio Network, the home of Radio Cherry Bomb, were on site recording the day's proceedings. Tickets to Jubilee sold out really fast this year, so I'm happy we're able to share the inspiring content with you. First, a shout out to our sponsors. The Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts, where you can start your journey to becoming a natural food chef today. Baldor Specialty Foods, which curates and delivers the best and freshest food in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. And Prince Street, the new fresh podcast with a culinary heart from Dean and DeLuca. Today's panel is called How to Be the Boss. It's not easy to be in charge, but done right, you have the power to change lives, your community, and maybe even the world. The moderator is the hardworking young entrepreneur Ellen Bennett, who has turned her Headley and Bennett Apron Company into one of the hottest new brands around. The panelists are Christina Minardi, President, Northeast Region of Whole Foods Market, Jody Berg, CEO of the family-run Vitamix brand, Katrina Markoff, founder and CEO of Vosges Haute Chocolat, and Amanda Hesser, co-founder and CEO of everyone's favorite recipe site, Food 52. Our editorial assistant, Gilly Houston, taught me a new term last week, HBIC. I had no idea what that meant. If you don't know what it means either, look it up, because you're about to hear from some major HBICs. And if you're not the boss, well, there's still a lot of wisdom to be gained from this panel, because after all, you are the boss of yourself. How to Be the Boss will begin right after this message from our sponsor, Natural Gourmet Institute. They've been great friends to Cherry Bomb this year as they sponsor Jubilee and this season of Radio Cherry Bomb. So be sure to check out their website. They also have a lot of easy tips on their Instagram account. Were you into avocado toast before any of your friends? Do you know how to whip up some cashew cream? And do you make your own almond milk? If so, you're our kind of person, and you might be interested in the classes at the Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts, located in the heart of Manhattan. Founded in 1977, NGI is the first culinary school dedicated to healthy cooking to be accredited nationally. Their professional chef's training program is offered full and part-time, and several of our favorite chefs are alumni, including Dirt Candy's Amanda Cohen, Alyssa Wagner of Dimes, and Chloe Coscarelli of By Chloe. Visit the NGI website to learn how you can transform your life and your career.
I'm super excited to be here. I'm going to stand up for a second. These ladies are badasses, and I'm super excited because I feel like we all have a lot to learn from them, and I'm kind of like in both shoes. I'm a boss, but I'm also 28, and there's a lot for me to learn. So basically, I'm just going to pick your brains on how I can grow my own business, and I'm sure you can all get a lot out of it. All right, let me take a seat. Okay, I've got all kinds of notes. Okay, so first off, my hands are super clammy right now because I'm real nervous, so bear with me. So I'm going to start off with saying that being a boss is really crazy, right? It's like you are officially saying, I want my job to be, I'm going to be responsible for all these people. And whatever happens, hell or high water, it's my job to make sure that the ship doesn't sink, right? So there's lots of different ways to be a boss, and all these ladies have different ways. And so I really want to know how you guys got into the shoes of being a boss. I want to start with you. How did you become the boss? Like, how do you get there? Where do you start? Where do you begin? What do you do to be the boss?
So I never dreamed or imagined that I would be the president or CEO of a company. And it wasn't on my radar. It wasn't where I was
at
going.
All.
At all.
Was it on your guys' radar to be CEOs? You're like, fuck. You're like,
oh,
fuck,
yeah.
Yes, it was. All right, cool. All right, good.
But what happened for me is I was able to find, when I was really young, what I'm really, really passionate about. And I just made sure whatever job I was doing, I was passionate about it. And if it meant being in this area or that, it didn't matter. I was there, and I was absolutely loving it. And when my father decided he was going to retire from Vitamix, he comes to me and he says, okay, it's official. I'm thinking of retiring. And I says, great, I will help you find your replacement. I said, the only thing I ask, it never occurred to me it would be me. I said, the only thing I ask is whoever we find, their vision for this organization is as big or bigger than mine. That's all I ask. And he said to me, he said, no, I was kind of thinking you. Which is when I laughed and said, oh my, you are such a dad. Of course you're thinking me. But obviously, I know nothing about running a company. This isn't what I didn't learn how to run a company. I just learned how to follow my dreams. And he said, exactly. That's why we need you in this job.
That's
and I've been following my dreams ever since.
Oh my gosh, that's so awesome. Okay, so Captain Amanda, I have a question for you. So I want to know, who did you meet along the way that made you the boss that you are today? Like, so we heard how she got into these shoes. We know that you wanted to be a CEO. So who did you meet? Was there a Martha Stewart in your life? Like, who was it that helped guide you to the spot where you are today?
I would say mostly having bad bosses, which I think we've all had, and sort of taking notes about how I would prefer to be treated better.
Not be that
yeah,
way?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, even my own father, who, like, ran our family business, like, he was a terror. And I grew up around that, and I just, like, that is not to me, like, I mean, he ran a great business, but... And people stayed forever, which I think is kind of sometimes shocks me because he was constantly screaming at everyone. But I did not want to be that way. And then I think just, but I always thought I'd be a boss. But then I ended up working at this big company for a long time. And it was really confusing to, like, not be able to make my own decisions. And I think it, like, made me really unhappy and actually drove me to kind of do something on my own. But it was, at the same time, I wasn't thinking, like, well, I'm going to do this because I want to be the boss who's making all the decisions. That was not the motivation. That was sort of just the result of taking on, like, going after a business that I thought was interesting. And then realizing, like, oh, wait, now I am the boss, and what kind of boss am I going to be? I think if I had one great boss, the person who comes to mind is Jodi Adams, the chef in Boston. I worked for her when I was in college, and it was actually this very, like, kind of big turning point for me because it was my first real kitchen job. And I went into this kitchen that was completely civilized. It was actually a lot of women were in the kitchen. It was probably about 50-50. Everyone was nice to each other. It was very supportive. It was completely unlike most kitchens. So I was like, oh, the restaurant field is great. Like, this is amazing. I'm definitely going to go and, like, go from what I was studying in college to food. Right. And then I learned, then I had, like, chefs who threw stuff at you. Anyway.
So I would say that if anyone can get a job in a kitchen at some point in their life, it's about the best training to be a boss ever, because you get your ass handed to you, then you have to hand out some asses to other people. And it's really brutal, but it puts you on the spot and it makes you super responsible. So I would say for me, working in a kitchen too was a way that it sort of trained me to be a boss. Okay, what about you, Miss Chocolate Lady?
You know, it's funny. I don't really relate so much to that word boss, to
yeah.
be honest. I'm sort of just passionately pursuing my vision without restraint, and I think to do that, it's important to be owning your thing and leading
yeah.
it. But that's what really drives me, is that part. Is like I'm so focused on experience and storytelling and open minds to new ideas and supporting women and entrepreneurship. That's what fuels me to, I have to be in this position to be able to do that. I feel like it's my platform. So.
Right. So when you and I were talking a couple days ago, you dove into something really interesting. You were talking about white space. And how you got into that, and how you realized that there was a white space, and then you dove into it and created your empire. Talk to us a little bit about how the hell you figured that out, because that was sort of like square one for you.
Yeah, so I mean, I started Vosges Chocolat 17 years ago, and I had just, you know, traveled around the world, got back, decided to move to Dallas, and...
Break it down into ABCs so these ladies can take some notes.
So essentially, you know, 17 years ago, there was this foodie movement occurring. You know, second wave of coffee had just happened. California was significant in wine, Wine Spectator, Cigar Aficionado, this return to old world luxuries. And then I started looking at the chocolate space and the chocolate gifting, because I was buying stuff for a catalog, and realized there was no innovation in chocolate. There was nothing I'd want to eat. There was no experiential quality. There, you didn't know what you were eating when you got a box of chocolate, you know, the whole Forrest Gump thing, which has changed a lot from that. And so I just felt that movement and realized, you know, I wanted to do something in the chocolate space, because chocolate's probably the most universal medium. You can go savory to sweet. And I just traveled around the world and wanted to tell stories through the medium of chocolate. And it really was, for me, an artful expression of my own personal experience. More than even, I realized there was a niche in the market. I realized there was a place for this from a business perspective, but...
So there were no brands like you at that time?
No, I mean, no. Like, there was nothing you couldn't... I mean, Dean and DeLuca and Eatsies in Dallas were, like, the two places, you know. It was just starting. There wasn't a chocolate bar category.
So what was, like, the first thing you did? Like, what... You were like, I have a dream. Then what? What was the next action?
Oh, so I basically made the product. So in food, it's so...
Where did you make the product?
In Dallas. So I just in my apartment.
In your apartment. In your apartment. You don't need an office to start a business.
Yeah.
Note one.
Yeah, I made it in Dallas and brought it in. Realized Dallas wasn't the right market for opening a chocolate brand at that time. It was very barbecue-centric. Moved to Chicago in Logan Square. Got an apartment that was big enough to make the chocolate in the apartment, store the boxes in the guest room, ship, box, got, you know, stock packaging, printed stickers at Kinko's.
And like, you did your branding? You figured-
Yeah, I drew the logo, and then I made friends with the guy at Kinko's who was a graphic designer, taught me Quark at the time, and I did that. And, like, I just figured it out.
Scrappy. Hashtag scrappy.
Yeah, I'm very scrappy, because, you know, sometimes the vision's so in your head, like, you have to actually make it. Like, it was sort of a manifestation of the product. So I did all of that, and had such a vision of aesthetically and what the brand meant and the symbolism of the color. And all those details I just did in my apartment in Chicago and Dallas. And then, you know, went to Whole Foods, went to Neiman Marcus, got a lot of press. I remember, you know, Food & Wine was very supportive.
How did you get into Neiman Marcus?
I went in with these chocolates that had curry and olive oil and paprika and said to the buyer, you know, this is going to be the new thing that's going to happen in chocolate. And he was like, uh-huh. So he took the chocolates.
But did you, like, grab the phone and call the buyer?
Or
did you walk into a store with them?
It was all about angel networking, that's what I say. It's like, I met somebody who really saw something, and what I was doing was like, I'm friends with the buyer there, go meet with him. I go meet with him. He wasn't impressed, but then he tried them and his staff tried them. He called me back and he's like, okay, if you come in on consignment, I'll take 24 boxes, but you got to sample. And if they sell, I'll keep reordering. So of course I'm like, yeah, you know, do it. So then I did that, started to sell. And then from that Neiman Marcus, it went to the Dallas one and then LA and then San Francisco.
And this was you doing all the hustle.
Yeah, scrappy. Go in there. You know, passion is a magnet. You know, so if you're passionate, people want to help you. It's like part of the American dream culture, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I say the angels show up. And whether it's a lawyer who did pro bono or the one person at Whole Foods who really believed in it and really supported it. And, you know, it's just that network of, you know, putting it out there, being exposed, being vulnerable, and being passionate.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think, you know, it's a recipe for...
Can I add something about the white space? Because somebody... I was just having a conversation about this on Friday, and this person pointed out that, you know, information is a commodity and that it's all about insights. Like, and that's sort of... I mean, it's exactly what you're saying, is that you had this insight about, like, the opportunity for chocolate, and I sort of feel like with any business, that really is the key component, is, like, your insight to, like, what's missing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then having the willingness and fire to kind of to make yourself vulnerable and go after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, 100%. I always say to people that are starting a business, it's like, make sure you're really satisfying a niche in the marketplace, and there's really a reason you should exist. You know, like, be really clear that space is there before you go in, because, like, then all the passion and all that works. But if you don't have that space in the market to do it, then, you know, it's challenging.
Yeah, I also think that it's really important to be authentic and true and real and not start your business copying someone else, because then you're just chasing someone else's dream, essentially, and looking at what are they going to do next, because I clearly am not that person and I don't have any ideas, so I'm just copying them.
Yeah, no, we talked a little bit about that, like, you know, there's a lot of competition in the chocolate space now.
Yeah.
And, like, the thing for me is always not looking left and right, but looking forward, like, what's next? Because if you look left and right, then you morph into something that's not very interesting and not very...
But do you guys feel like you spend a lot of time, because we all have people that copy us, right? My gosh, Whole Foods. Like, you guys were the freaking pioneers of, like, natural food. Do you feel like you get copied? I mean, how do you deal with that? Do you want to punch people in the face all day? Ugh.
That would get me into trouble.
I would. Like, move aside.
Last in the Whole Foods for your chocolate. Hopefully we made it a little bit easier for you.
Yeah,
I hope so.
For sure.
Yes, the answer is, I mean, for Whole Foods Market
the answer
right now,
is yes, I want to punch
we have
everyone.
More competition than we've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's funny.
And how does that make you feel? Does it suck,
you know,
or are you dealing with it? Like, talk
it makes
to
us better.
Yeah.
I think it forces us to up our game every single time, which is good. But there's a funny story that I think about is Growlers. So most people don't know this, but we were one of the first stores in New York City to put growlers in. You know, the beer growlers where you fill the bottles. And we did it with our beer store in Bowery and Houston because we tried to get a wine license there and we couldn't. So we said, okay, we're going to make a really cool beer store. It's, you know, it's Bowery. It's a great area. And so we did growlers. First time. It was awesome. It was 12 years ago. Now you can get growlers at Duane Reade. Like, that makes me a little mad.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, we did that. That was our idea to do growlers.
But so
that one makes me a little annoyed.
Totally. So you're a really established company compared to a lot of people in the audience, yet we're all dealing with copying. So at a really large scale level, like Whole Foods, how do you stay ahead of that, or how do you stay fresh? How do you maintain a brand that big, who's like more like a cruise ship and we're like little sailboats out here? Like, how do you handle it?
Yep, great question. You know, the first thing that happens when a new competitor comes in, you know, we go in there, we look at them, and the first thing...
So you scope.
We totally scope. And the first thing my team will come back and say is like, oh, this was bad, and that was bad. And I'm like, okay.
So do you tell them to go scope? Like, who's making that call? Because I feel like that's sort of like a boss call.
It's kind of a natural thing at this point.
Yeah, like, go check them out.
We literally have a competition coordinator on our regional team.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, so she tells us when new things are going to open and, you know, when we go. So, yeah, it's kind of a natural thing. But it naturally, the team is so... you know, they're so proud of their own work. The first thing they see is all the wrong. And then I go back to them and I say, no, look, this is what they're really good at. And this is what you can learn from. Because all they want to do is trash the competitor.
Right.
It's human nature. So, you know, then I really force them to go back in and see what it is that they're doing really well and how we can learn from it.
Definitely.
But, you know, we're like I said, I mean, we've seen more competition in the last few years than we've ever seen.
But you feel like it makes you stronger because
it does make us stronger.
Innovating.
I mean, it does nip away at our business, and I think we've seen that the last few years. Fast casual, you know, is through the roof, and so many food halls just here in Manhattan now. We are unique because we design every single store differently and special for the community that we're in, and we spend a lot of time doing that so we can be competitive. And we're constantly innovative.
So that's your way to stay fresh, is changing.
Constantly
it up changing.
I mean, we could design a store that we've designed, let's say, 3 years ago, but we haven't started construction on. And I could go back and redo the whole design saying, oh, no, it's outdated, we have to change it. It drives construction crazy, but it's the right thing to do because we have to stay at the top of our game. We really do. Because we always feel like we're being chased.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, Mrs. Vitamix. So how do you deal with being pretty much like a one product situation? How do you guys stay relevant? What are you guys doing?
So we have been passionate about helping people eat healthier for just decades. It started in 1921 with my great-grandfather, and he was looking for a product that, how could we help people eat healthier food? So if you can only imagine, we're focused on this in the 50s, in the 60s, in the 70s, in the 80s, in the 90s, when nobody else is thinking about it. It's fast food, it's convenient, it's everything like that. And so it was finally in 2004 where we started to see a shift in the wind. It's where a store like Whole Foods, somebody would name a store.
So you saw the white space.
Absolutely. And we saw that people were looking at their health and realizing that the food, the food you eat has an impact on you. So we had our passion for a very, very long time, and you don't lose sight of that. Right. And what I love about what you just said a minute ago is how you stay competitive, your strategic competitive advantage. It's knowing what it is that you care most about. What are you most passionate? Why are you here? Why is your product here? Why is your brand here?
Your purpose.
Don't lose sight of that. Yeah. And if you're looking at your competition, you think, oh, we should do this, we should do that. Don't look back. Don't look to the side. Look about where you're going. Look about what your direction is and stay completely focused on that. So that's what we've done over the years. And as a result, when we were the first company, we created the first infomercial. I don't know if a lot of people know that. But
really?
Yeah. In 1949, my great-grandfather took his demonstration and he put it on television. Nothing else was on TV at the time, right?
Bowflex did not exist yet.
Right. But the thing that happened is by putting that on TV, now he was talking to everyone in the U.S. about what you could do with blending. It wasn't a high-performance blender at that time. And everyone got excited about it, and our competitors came in, and they just slapped a label on the side of their box that said, just like the one on TV. And it literally just was like the one on TV, right? Because we weren't really a different product at that time. And we had a choice. And all of you are going to come to this point in the road where you have a choice, where some of your competition is coming out, and they're going to force you to make decisions. And we said, do we want to compete, or do we really, truly want to focus on whole food blending and helping people eat healthier and get more whole foods into their diet? And if that's our choice, then we went that direction, and we said, you know what? Let's create products that do that better than anyone else on the planet. And we made that choice then, and we make that choice every single day when something else comes out. So we're all about blending, right? We know what's happening in blending today. We know where blending is going. We've got R&D out there. And the stuff that's coming down the pipeline about what you can do in blending equipment, it's amazing. It's absolutely fantastic. So just focus on what you want to do, and that's how we stay ahead of the competition. We have competition out there now, right? And they're all saying the same thing, and they're saying, you know what? You can eat healthier with this blender or that blender. In part, we're in a situation, and I'm sure many of you are in the same case, where we can say, you know what? Our vision as an organization is to prove the vitality of people's lives. If there's other competitors out there that are helping people get there, then God bless them. Right. And God bless everyone else that's getting there, because now there's more people on this planet that are eating healthier. We'll differentiate by saying, we know that we're more reliable, we know that we're more durable, we know that we're going to perform better, and we know that we're in it because we want to build relationships for life with people. We know that we're in it because we want to change the world. They're in it for a different reason. Somebody buys one of their equipment, it gets them started, fantastic.
Right.
At some point, when they really say, you know what, this is working, this is real, it's having an impact on my life, I am feeling better, I am healthier, and I actually would like to work with a brand that's going to partner with me and make sure that I can actually change my life and I can make the world healthier for generations to come, eventually people will recognize that there are companies out there like that. And
so it's like you're really focusing a lot. I feel like all of us up here have a why and a purpose and a reason and a drive, and there's like the top of the mountain that we're heading towards. Do you feel like that's what differentiates your business the most? Like having that, do you feel like that makes you unique?
You're picking up on a common message of passion today.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that the one thing that we've definitely seen, and I think this like tying back to being a boss, is that, again, I also agree with you, it's a strange word, is that we've learned, like as we've hired more people, is they bring so much to what you're doing and to, you know, your goals and your purpose. And I think that's been a real delight. And I think understanding the value of that and also understanding how to harness it is really one of the great kind of and interesting challenges of running a business.
Yeah, agreed. It's finding people that are equally passionate as you to help you push the business.
Well, and making sure that, you know, you're hiring people who aren't only, you know, intelligent and ambitious, but like who have different perspectives and who are really kind of bringing things that like you never would have thought of.
Right. So how, let's talk a little bit about hiring. How do you guys go about doing that? Do you have any tricks or things that you can teach us about hiring the right people for you or firing the wrong people? And at what point do you do that? What's your cue on that?
So, you want to,
talk to me over there.
You know, we say this to our store team leaders in the stores, is you're hiring for attitude more than anything. You can teach the hard skills.
Right.
For us, we want to hire people that are passionate about food and also passionate about people. We're in the people business and the food business.
Right. Is there a certain question that you ask people when you're hiring them that sort of triggers what their real, true attitude is? Or, you know, because everyone goes to an interview and they're like, oh my God, I'm the happiest person in the world. And you're like, all right, buddy, like, talk to me. What's really happening underneath that?
You know,
that?
I really always ask them what they ate the night before.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
That's like a kind of a standard question for me is always, what have you eaten the night before?
Okay.
And if they said McDonald's, that's kind of a bad. I did have somebody answer that once. Okay. So, yeah, and again, I think, you know, one of the things that I really try to get out of an interview, and even if I'm interviewing, is tell a story. So ask questions that are going to allow that person to tell you a real life experience story.
Okay.
Because it gives credibility to their leadership, it gives credibility to what they've experienced in life, and you can really have a good understanding of who that person is. Because an interview is an hour.
Right.
So if you say,
oh, wow,
you know,
that's pretty good.
Here's a, you know, well, we're kind of interesting. So the way we do our interviews, it's always a panel interview. So if you're applying for a store team leader job, which is our store managers, all those jobs are posted. And then the people that are going to be reporting to that person, they develop, we have a panel of about 15 people. So we'll have department managers or team leaders that we call and team members. And in essence, they get to pick their new boss, their new leader. And that, we find, gives complete buy-in to make that person successful. So they're really ultimately deciding who their new leader is going to be.
Got it. And how about firing? How many people in this audience have fired somebody? Whew, that's pretty good. That's some life experience.
Separated is such a better word.
Yes, it's true. I have to say, one of the interesting ways that I've actually fired people is I have seen that they're unhappy, and we're unhappy because they're unhappy. And I've talked to them and I'm like, are you happy here? How's it going? Like, and I basically get them to dish out how they're unhappy. And I'm like, what are you doing here? Go get a job that you really love. Go find something that's like your passion. We had this boy that loved music, and he wanted to be in the music world, and he was 22 working for us, and you know, he would like sell an apron or two, and I was like, he does not want to be selling aprons. What are we doing? And so I talked to him, and I was like, you know what? You're 22. You should be working your ass off in an internship for like Capitol Records or something. That's where you need to be at this point in your life. And he was like, my God, you're right. And essentially, he put in his 2 weeks' notice for me, with me. And it was amazing because, A, it left a great sort of feeling of me helping him. He was happy that I opened the door and said, go do what you really need to do. And that's how I got my first cooking job, was because I had this personal chef job and I kind of hated it. And I sort of got myself fired so that I would actually go get a professional cooking job. And the lady was like, you need to go. Like, I don't know what you're doing here. And it was out of the blue, out of nowhere. One day I decided I don't want to work for her anymore. And then the next day she fired me. So it was sort of unusual. And then I went and got a job at the first kitchen that I worked. So that, I guess that's my way of firing, which is peculiar and odd, but it's very helpful. Do you guys have any other, like, interesting ways that you've fired people? Or how did you decide to fire someone?
I mean, you know, our business has gotten bigger now, and I used to do that all the time, and now...
How many employees do you have?
100 or so.
100.
But my HR person says I can't do that anymore because considered leading.
Protecting you. They're protecting you.
Leading, and then they can sue you for that. That's just... This is why I said I wanted to start my own like lab and innovation in my own company, because all those rules.
Even if... So that's really funny because, yes, our HR people say the same sort of thing to me, but like... What about if that person is truly unhappy there? Like, you can't have a conversation?
I totally agree. Like, I think we're all humans, and if you approach someone in a human kind of way, the trust that you gain in just doing that, to me, like, I will, you know, continue to do that because I just believe in being, I don't know, like, real with people.
Yeah.
Because when it becomes so professional and you have to have... these many write-ups and this many sit-downs, and it's like, I'd rather just be straight. But there's a balance between, I guess, you know, we've been sued and these things happen, but, you know, between that and being real and professionalizing it. So, you know, I'm sort of transitioning into that other world.
So you have to sort of be, the bigger you get, you have to be professionaler.
Yeah, exactly.
But you also, I feel like it's really important to stay human. And stay real with all the people. I mean, can we touch on a really important note here for a second? Women, like, how are you guys, how do you deal with the women that you work with and families and pregnant ladies and all that? That's a whole other can of worms, speaking of tricky subjects.
So I think that's something we feel very strongly about, which is that our maternity leave is exactly the same as our paternity leave.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and I think it's a really important thing I would encourage everyone to do, because the point that this is a group effort, and you should support men. They should be able to take time off as well. It's not just about the woman needing time. Like, the men need time too, and kind of encouraging them to do so.
How long is your paternity leave at your company?
I think it's like it's pretty short. It's like 2 or 3 months. You know, it's not. I actually can't remember the number, but it's like 8 or 12 weeks.
Yeah. Is that the same for all of you guys?
Three months.
Yeah, we do 3 months as well.
Can we go back to the hiring?
Absolutely, let's go back.
I feel like interviews are tough, and I think like spending time with people, especially the big hires, you have to see them many times.
Yeah.
And it's funny, James Freeman, the founder of Blue Bottle, told me that he's really slow at hiring, and it's because he needs to spend enough time with somebody that when he sees an appointment with them on the calendar, he feels like, oh, good, I'm excited to see that person. Mm. And I thought that was a really interesting...
Like, how many times do you think he interviews people? Did he tell you how many times?
He didn't tell me how many times, okay. But I took that as more than twice. you know, and I think that you spend a lot of time with people who you hire.
Yeah.
You do need to look forward to seeing them, and I do think that there's something kind of... I think your unconscious does a lot of work around whether you feel like someone's a good fit, and sort of that's speaking to you if you are excited to see that person on your calendar. And it's just like things come up. People should reveal themselves over time.
Right.
The first interview is easy to skate by. And I do think another question that we always ask is, talk about adversity. Like, tell us something that happened, like something bad that happened to you and how you got over it. And, you know, it's interesting because sometimes people will tell a very, like, personal story, and other times they'll tell a work story, but it's almost always really revealing and helpful. And I also think asking people to tell about a time that they felt like the system wasn't, sorry, the system wasn't right, or like they didn't think things were like working the way they should, and how they went about fixing it. Because, I mean, if you're building a business, it's all about problem solving, and if this person doesn't have any experience problem solving, it doesn't matter what role they're in, it's not going to work.
That's a very good point. Do you have anything to add?
I do. I want to touch on this, but I want to reframe it just a little bit.
Okay.
So one of the things that was said earlier is a lot of the reasons people in this room have become a boss is because they want to follow their own personal passion, and you realize it's really, really difficult to do that and unless you are the boss. But I guess I want to tell everyone that you don't have to be the boss to follow your personal passion, but you do have to find a boss or a company that will let you do that. And those types of companies are out there. So if some of you are panicking, saying, I want to follow my passion, but oh my gosh, I do not want to be the boss, there's a lot of opportunities out there for you to figure that out. But don't settle. Don't settle for a company, and don't settle for a boss that doesn't allow you to follow your personal purpose and passion in life. So that interview process is going both ways. So when you're interviewing, if you're not completely ecstatic about who you're talking to or the company that you're working for, then stop. No, don't go there. And I've had, I'm actually going back to my PhD. I think I said that on the radio station.
Yes.
And what I'm studying is this concept of personal purpose. And the last research study I did indicates that if people have a personal purpose, if they can articulate it and define it, they will be more engaged, more committed, and have this level of life satisfaction that you can't get other ways. So what I do in at Vitamix is when I'm interviewing people, I ask them, what is your personal purpose in life? What are you most passionate about more than anything else? I do.
Yeah.
And and when I'm talking to employees, I help them figure out what that is. And I've had employees come to me and say, Jody, I'm leaving because of you. Now, of course, your first thought is, ah! And they say,
like, no.
They say, no, I've discovered who I am, and I've discovered what my personal passion is, and it's not here. It's got to be out there. And when somebody can come to me and say that, then I say, then let me help you get there. Because I know, and it works, that this passion, knowing what you want in life. So if you haven't done that yet, if you haven't figured it out, then go figure out what you're passionate about. Go figure out, why am I on this planet? What difference can I make? And why do I want to make that difference? Figure that out before anything else. And then go out, and you can either be the boss to do that, or you can find a boss to work for that allows you to be that way, or a company that you work for that allows you to be that way, and you will find this level of life satisfaction greater than anything you've ever dreamed or imagined.
Amazing. So you touched on a really amazing note right now. That was very well said. You don't have to be the boss if you don't want to. Not everyone is cut out to own their own business or run their own show, but maybe that is, they can do that within a company.
You know, reframe it. You don't have to be the boss of others, but everyone should be the boss of themselves.
Amen. How many people in this audience are a boss at their work? Okay, awesome. And how many people here are the CEOs or the heads of the entire company where they're at? Awesome. How many people are the boss at home? Better? Awesome. Okay, cool. And how many people here are leaders of more than a couple people? You actually have like lots of juniors. Okay, cool. Just gauging the audience. Awesome. Okay, good. So I want to talk a little bit about leadership style. You've had bosses, you are bosses. How do you lead, and why do you lead that way? Anybody?
You know, we spoke on the phone. I think a lot of us as leaders are, you know, we're what we were brought up as and what we reflected on when we were children. And we might not even have realized it. I mean, for myself, I was lucky. My grandparents started a bakery in 1927. And I grew up in that environment, which was great, food and people. But my grandfather died in the 60s, and my grandmother took over this bakery and was the boss in 1964, which was really unheard of, over 100 employees. And she was tough. Oof. And which she had to be, obviously, yeah. And had my father and his uncles, but she clearly was the boss. And we were all, you know, a little bit afraid of her. And I don't think I ever realized it at the time that I would in many ways follow in her footsteps. And I think just for myself, I have very high standards. I can be tough at times. But as I said to you on the phone when we talked, I think it's okay to have all those high standards. And I think sometimes as women, we get a little bit of a bad rap on that. But if you do it with love and compassion, I think it means the world. Like, you can say, listen, this is my expectation, and it is all the way up here. But you, what I said was the sandwich. It's like, you tell somebody something really great, you tell them what they really have to work on, and you end it with something really great. And it helps deliver that message. But it's okay to have high standards. It's okay to push to get things done. But always do it with love and compassion. If you do that, it really will help you with your leadership.
Anyone else?
We really feel like transparency is super important, and not just in the sort of leader to, you know, person who's reporting to them, but just throughout the company. And I think that encourages like a much more kind of like positive relationship and trust, and it allows people to feel like they can ask you those hard questions, have those hard conversations with you about if they. That this isn't the place for them or whatever it is. And I think that, like, as women, sometimes you feel like you have to be tough because, you know, to sort of counterbalance our sort of nurturing. But I actually think that the more we can embrace nurturing as bosses, the better. I think that because I think, I don't know, one or a couple of you guys earlier, and I really agree, is that, like, people... Like, even if actually your business is their passion, it may not be, like, their only stop on their journey, right? Like, everyone has their own journey, and I think that, like, we feel like it's important for us to help support people's development along the way. And so, like, I definitely have had those conversations where somebody has decided to, like, move on. I'm going to give you a specific example. Brett Warshaw, who's now the COO of Lucky Peach. She worked for us in college. Like, I think I even met her, like, when she was in high school. Like, I feel like, you know, I've watched her grow up. And she worked for us after college, and she was totally fantastic. But you could tell she was restless. Like, she just, it wasn't, like, she hadn't seen enough yet. Like, she hadn't done enough, and she wanted to kind of get out there. And so she did. And, of course, like, that day when we talked about it, I was disappointed, but I was also like, you know what, this is the right thing for you. Yeah. It's a pain in the ass for me in the short term because we've got to replace you and we got to like figure out transition and all, and you do so much, so shit, you know, like all of those feelings. But I like, you have to see the long term, and like Brett and I, you know, we I think we're having breakfast next week. Like, we see each other a lot. Like, I think that it's really important to see your role not as just like shaping people to do the things that you need them to do for the business, but helping them for their lives.
Yeah, completely agree. How do you guys feel like you've established that sort of relationship with your juniors and your entire company? Do you go around and check in with people? Do you say hi every morning? Like, what is your, I guess, technique to stay in touch and involved with everyone and not be someone like up in a tower who's the CEO?
You know, you can use all sorts of different approaches, and we may use different ones, but I'd say most importantly, be authentic. Be authentic and be real. Yeah. And if stopping by and talking to people every day is authentic and real for you, then do it.
Yeah.
And if there's something else that's authentic and real, then do that. And just make sure that you're authentic. You know, we have an amazing blessing because we are women. And I say that because we get to be who we are. And this is the time where Jasmine and Melissa were talking about it, where it's evolved, right? There's so much of an advantage that we can bring to the table because we have a little bit more experience of how to be authentic. We don't have to be anyone else. Just figure out who you are and bring that to the table. And then what it does is it allows the people that work with you and around you to also be authentic. And then you can have those types of relationships. You can have the transparency, right? You can be tough and you can nurture people at the same time because it's who you are and they see that authenticity.
So one thing I started doing at my company, I mean, I do work at an apron factory, so it was a bit of a joke. My boyfriend was like, why don't you wear a hard hat while you go around and talk to people? And I was like, that's really funny, but I'm going to do it. So I started wearing a hard hat while I go around and do inspections, and my quote-unquote inspections are basically going to every single employee that I have. I started this 2 weeks ago, and saying, hey, how's it going? What are you working on? What's going on? You need any help with anything? How can I help you? And they were floored by it. Like, people couldn't believe, because I used to sort of run into the office. I work in a treehouse. I'd run into the treehouse at the factory, and I would just be on emails, calls. People would schedule with my assistant to get a minute with me. And since I started talking to every single person, I feel like I work at a different company. And it's been very amazing talking to people, because you never know the things that you're going to learn just by communication. I mean, that's what started my company, was me talking to people. So talking to your employees, you can learn a lot. I think that that's really important. We forget that the people closest to you may have the best advice for the future decisions. I've learned a lot from my employees, and they're actually, our morale at the company is a lot better. So that's my interesting way of leading, was with a hard hat. So I want to talk about something that I know happens to all of us, motherfucking meltdowns. Yes. What do those look like for you? We got to be real about this, because let's be honest, it is no joke.
My daughter's giving you the, like, you just cursed expression.
Sorry. I've really been trying to control my inner line cook, and it's been really hard. How do you guys have meltdowns? Where do you have them? What does that look like? How do you recover? Everybody has meltdowns, let's be honest. So let's talk about that for a hot minute, because we have 3 minutes, and I still have two really important questions. Go. Whole Foods.
Going first, huh? Okay.
And how do you recover?
I had a mini one, actually, just a couple days ago, and the person that was on the receiving end is actually in the room today, so she'll be okay hearing this. But we're opening a store in Wall Spring Lake, and some of the signage wasn't put up at the right height. They drilled into the tile. I was very unhappy about it. So there's a lot of, like, heavy breathing, and then you just kind of get to the point where you really need to walk away and just say, like, fix it and kind of walk away.
Okay.
But
so you walk away. That's your technique.
After it all gets after. Out.
Are you a yeller? Do you yell?
I don't think I yell, but okay. I don't think I yell. I talk very passionately.
Okay, yes. Got it. Amanda, how do you deal with meltdowns? You never have meltdowns?
I don't really have that kind of meltdown. I did cry in front of our whole team once because we had a bad thing happen, and someone, it's all fixed now, but someone did not pay our taxes. And it was, and lied about it and hid it, and very ugly situation. And I just went, I didn't think I was going to cry, but we needed to tell everyone that this happened, because we believe in transparency. This is not something that we're going to hide from everyone. I'm also just telling an audience. and I just broke down as I was reading it, because I think that I trust people, apparently, and I was really hurt. And afterwards I was like, oh, you know, maybe I had mixed feelings, but then I kind of came around to feeling like, you know, I showed them that I'm human. Yeah. And I get upset. And if someone perceives that as weak, then they're probably just not a good fit for our company anyhow, and not the kind of people we want to surround ourselves with. So.
Amen. Okay, last thing. Mentors. Do you guys have any mentors or anyone that you go to when you have a meltdown? Where have you found these people? If people don't have one, how do you suggest finding this person for them?
I have mentors or angels or, you know, people that I talk to. I have kind of a short list of people that I call that can help me quickly through things. So I think that's really important to have that one or two people that can that you can have access to. And I mean, I don't know how you find them. I think they find you, you find them. But, you know, my new chocolate brand, Wild Ophelia, I've been, you know, working a lot on trying to get that launched and going. And I have a couple people that have really sort of been rocks for me in those challenges to get over. But, I mean, I guess events like this and networking and, you know.
It's a person that's always going to tell you the truth when you don't want to hear it. That's it's got to be the one. Say, hey, you're wrong.
Right.
And fix it. It's got to be that person.
Okay. Personal advisory board, right? It could be one or more, but it's not people that are going to agree with you. It's people that are going to look you in the eye and say, you are nuts. And you're going the wrong way. And you're blinded. Yeah, so I agree 100%.
Amazing. Okay. All right. Any last parting words of advice or motivation for all these fine ladies out here that we can share for them about how to keep going when everything looks like you shouldn't keep going? How do you keep yourself going? Because you are at the top, and that is sometimes a really lonely place. What do you do to push forward?
I just remind myself as to why I'm here, and I'm here because I want to make the world a better place. I'm here because I want to improve the vitality of people's lives, and, you know, don't sweat the little stuff. And I'm having a really bad day, and there's something going wrong, and then I just step back and think about, keep my focus on the big goal and why I'm here. And it's amazing how the other stuff kind of goes into perspective.
Okay, awesome.
Be nice, be personal.
Amen.
Yeah, like trust your instincts without any fail. Like really tap into that intuition, that sense of self, and really don't doubt it.
I think that all of us as women, when you get to a place of leadership and responsibility, it's our responsibility to help other women move up. Tap them on the shoulder, give them that push. Because for some reason, I have found that women need that push a little bit more. And I was the first woman regional president for Whole Foods Market, and that was 11 years ago. It took us that long to get a woman. And I am constantly pushing other people, and 50% of my store team leaders are women, and it's the only region that has that. So I think it's our job to do that when we move up.
Amazing, ladies. Thank you so much for that. And I just want to close with one final thing. I want everyone to stand up again. You too. This is how every week we have a staff meeting at our office, and we always end with a really fun quote or something crazy that we'll yell out. We'll put our hands together. So you guys can put your hands together with your neighbors. Let's put our hands together. We're all going to make a decision here that we're going to leave this today, and we're going to kill it, okay? So we're all going to yell out, let's kill it, on the count of three, okay? But you really have to mean it. I want the windows to break. All right, here we go. One, two, three. Let's kill it! Woo!
As Vitamix's Jody Berg said, you don't have to be the boss of others, but everyone should be the boss of themselves. Thanks to Ellen and all of our panelists for sharing their insight. If you'd like to be in the know about next year's Jubilee conferences in New York and San Francisco, sign up for our mailing list at cherrybomb.com. Thanks to our engineer, Dave Tatasciore, and thanks again to our sponsors for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb. Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts. Start your journey to becoming a natural food chef today by visiting ngihca.edu. Prince Street, a fresh podcast with a culinary heart. For more, visit livefromprincestreet.com or download the Prince Street podcast from iTunes. Baldor Specialty Foods curates and delivers the best and freshest food in the world to the restaurant and hospitality industries. Learn what Baldor can do for your business today at baldorfood.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
Hi, I'm Jenny Rips, and I'm the founder of Owl's Brew, a tea and botanical-based cocktail mixer. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Janie Hoffman, founder of fabulously healthy brand, Mama Chia.